the last 5 years, not one child has left school before at least the end of high school. And just in the last 12 months, I've had two people who've actually gone to university. And that's, I mean, it might sound easy for people around the world, but in this village, that is unheard of before, right? And so to me, it's priceless. It's truly priceless. That is the only reason you see me online. I mean, I'm old enough to stick my feet up and do nothing, okay? But I don't want to, because this is the thing that drives me.
Hello, and you're very welcome to another episode of the Life Well Lived podcast with me, Shane Breslin. My guest on this episode of the show is Peter Beckenham. I first got to know Peter a couple of years ago when I saw what he was up to on Facebook. Here was a man who, without wishing to cast any aspersions on him or to throw any stereotypes his way, was clearly not in the first flush of youth, but he was using technology and social media in a way that put many people many decades younger than him to shame. Peter is a sales coach and he lives in a small village in the east of Thailand, not far from the Cambodian border. And from there, he runs a business that serves business owners and entrepreneurs all over the world. As so many people get to grips with the new reality that's dawning all over the globe right now, with the coronavirus pandemic and the economic fallout from that tipping the global economy into an instant recession and forcing tens of millions of people to reevaluate their entire lives and careers, I thought it would be really great to have a chat with someone who has seen so much in his lifetime. Peter is 75 this year and is still busy, active and productive, running a single person global business from deepest Southeast Asia. I really admire everything that Peter's about. We worked together for a brief spell early last year and he gave me a new perspective on business and especially on sales. I hope you enjoy this conversation, which I really believe will be helpful to a lot of people who may now, following job losses and shuttered businesses on every continent around the world, find themselves propelled into the role of reluctant business owner trying to find their way. So without further ado from me, over to this week's interview with the global sales coach and someone who is a living embodiment of the philosophy of serving instead of selling and problem solving instead of pitching, Peter Beckenham. Peter, it's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Shane. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
I was really interested in talking to you. As I mentioned before we started recording, I've been thinking about inviting you on this show for about 12 months now. We've got to know each other a little bit longer than a year, and we worked together for a short while last year. And I really admire everything that you do and how you go about it. And if I have to give myself credit for anything, and I struggle to give myself credit for stuff, it's seeing and knowing when people are real. And I felt in our conversations last year and more recently that I'm always speaking to somebody real. So I was really interested for a number of reasons during the current coronavirus pandemic that's affecting all of us in loads of different ways all over the world. I was really interested in getting your perspective and hearing a little bit more about your story.
Shane, let's put the cards on the table. I'll be 75 in July this year. I'm old enough to have retired, okay? However, I have a mission that drives me. And my mission is, I live in a remote little Thai village because I married a Thai lady many years ago and we've got daughters and grandchildren, etc. But when I look over the fence in my village, I am just hit in the face with the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because this village is desperately poor, but they're extremely proud. In their culture, they cannot accept me giving them some funds and money to help them because they have a thing called krenjai. Krenjai means do not accept something you can never repay. Does that make sense?
It does.
So what I did and what I do is I focus and I use, because I'm a sales coach, right? That's what my job is, right? I've been doing it I've been in sales for 36 years. But what I do is I use my sales coaching fees and revenue to educate the children in the village because I want to break the vicious cycle of poverty. Because the problem is most of the children in this village get to about 13 or 14 years of age and they're taken out of school by their parents to work in the rice farm, and it's a never-ending cycle of poverty and indebtedness to the bank. And so to be quite frank with you, Shane, In the last 5 years, not one child has left school before at least the end of high school. That was a plus for me. And just in the last 12 months, I've had two people who've actually gone to university. And that's, I mean, it might sound easy for people around the world, but in this village, that is unheard of before, right? And so to me, it's priceless. It's truly priceless. That is the only reason you see me online. I mean, I'm old enough to stick my feet up and do nothing, okay? But I don't want to, because this is the thing that drives me. And plus the fact I know I can impact people, I can help people. And in so doing it, therefore, it's a perfect combination. I help them to improve their business, and they help me to improve the livelihood of the children in my village. And I can't think of a better way than that to do things.
It's an amazing thing to be able to do. It's an amazing thing to be driven to do. I want to hear more about how all that works and what life is like on the ground in Thailand. You've been in sales for 36 years, and if my mental arithmetic is up to scratch, that means that you started in sales at about 38, 39 years old. Can you rewind to your early adulthood and tell me, what was the foundation of Peter Beckenham? Where did you come from? What did you do in your early adulthood?
Have we got 3 days? Basically, I graduated from university in economics. Okay, that was my area of interest and marketing and expertise. But in those days when I graduated, I never thought about this as an opportunity. I just wanted to go and become an economist and walk around with a fancy suit on and a briefcase, right? But in those days, they were bringing in teachers from all over the world. I mean, I'm from Australia, and in particular from Sydney and New South Wales, because there was a huge teacher shortage. And I'd never been trained as a teacher. I thought, well, why not give this a shot? Okay, I mean, after all, I love kids. I've always loved kids, right? And I contacted the Department of Education. This is back in 1968. Get your maths right, all right? I hope I'm right. In 1968. And they suggested to me that they would accept me immediately. I said, but hang on, I haven't got any qualifications to be a teacher. They said, look, we're bringing people in from everywhere, including Ireland, by the way, Shane, including Ireland. Okay, we will teach you to be a teacher in your first year. In other words, you're going to learn on the job. So that's what I did, okay? And in my very first year, I ended up as the only male in an all-girls high school, okay? It's called Manly Girls High in Sydney. And I was probably 3 or 4 years older than the senior students. That's it. So I was quite a novelty when you think about it. And I had a principal and a deputy principal who were both ex-army sergeant majors who were tough old biddies, really tough old biddies. But, you know, we became firm friends, really firm friends, because they could see the challenge I was under in the environment I was in, but they could also see the results I was bringing to the kids in the school. So, and by the way, that included getting my car washed every day, which is nice, right? So during the end of 1 year, in those days, being a single male in the education in Australia, you are very movable. So the education department wanted to move me to the country because there were shorter teachers in the country. And both the deputy and the principal fought like mad to keep me, which I took as a huge compliment, truly a huge compliment. And so I had another year at Manly Girls High. I became the hockey coach and Uncle Peter for half the staff, half the students, etc. Anyway, I ended up going to the countryside. Long story short, Shane, I spent the next 14 or 15 years in education. Absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was my passion and got some fantastic results from the students, you know, in terms of economics and social sciences. That's where I was. But my problem was I did it too damn well. They kept promoting me. Okay, they promoted me to a subject master. They promoted me to a deputy principal. In the end, they promoted me to a principal. Now, it's all well and good to be a principal and have a salary which is better than an ordinary teacher. But, Shane, I'm an administration nightmare. I didn't join the education department to run meetings. I joined the education department to teach kids. So I said to them, I will accept the role of the school principal on the proviso you give me just one, at least one senior class to keep my feet in the water so I can help the kids with this, their knowledge and implication and understanding of economics. And the Department of Education said, no, we can't do that because you've got to look after parents and citizens and recalcitrant bus drivers and whatever it is, okay, and do the timetable. I said, fine, I'll do the timetabling, but I want one class. They said, no. I said, well, sorry, I'm leaving. They said, you can't. I said, yes, I can. I mean, this is a month's notice I'm giving you. I don't want to leave my role with helping kids, but I'm no longer helping kids. Okay? I'm actually an administrator. So that's why at the end of 1 month, I left and I asked my wife at the time because I'm living and married to a Thai lady, but before that I was married to another lady in Australia. Mm. And I asked my wife at the time, tell me the worst job you can think of. And she said, why? I said, because I'm going to leave teaching. She said, you can't. You can't leave teaching. I said, yes, I can. And I told her why. And she started to understand. She said, let me think about it. I said, okay, I have a breakfast next morning. You tell me what the worst job is. She said, why? I said, because if you think it's the worst job, I'm going to have a crack at it because I reckon I can do it differently than everybody else. And therefore, whatever the role may be, okay, I mean, don't give me the role of an undertaker. I can't handle that, right? Hmm. But whatever the role may be, I can do it differently and I could make a success of it. Breakfast next morning, she said, I've got two options for you, but really I've only got one. The first one is selling cars because I hate that, especially used car salesmen. And the second one, a life insurance agents. I said, fine, I'll take it. She said, what? You're not? I said, yes, I am. I'm going to take it. So I went to the nearest life insurance office. In those days, I was living in Canberra, the capital of Australia, right? I went to the nearest life insurance office and asked them, are they recruiting agents that week? Oh, what a stupid question. They're always recruiting agents, right? But they said, yes, blah, blah, blah. But they bring the manager, and the manager's in the same Rotary Club as me. He said, hey, Peter, what are you doing? I said, I want a job as an agent. He said, no, you're a principal of the school. I said, no, I want a job as an agent. Oh, this guy has some lunch and we'll talk about it. I said, no, I want a job as an agent. This story was repeated 3 times till I finally found someone who didn't know me and I got accepted as an agent. Now, that's when I started my role in sales. And at that point in time, I was exposed to traditional sales techniques that truly, Shane, left me dry in the mouth.
Describe some of those traditional sales techniques, because I think in a lot of cases, we're still exposed to those types of sales techniques, whether that's online or offline. Would that be fair to say?
Yes. I mean, at the bottom line, never accept a no for an answer. Be persuasive. Convince people. Okay. Do not, whatever you do, just make sure that you keep talking until they give in. I mean, those things are abhorrent to me. I'm just giving you a short version of it, but you can see where I'm coming from, right? Mm. And so when it comes to, for example, prospecting for new clients, you just go out there and you cold call and you cold call and you cold call. And hopefully one day someone might say, I'm interested. That wasn't my cup of tea and didn't fit in my basket either. I said to the sales trainer, I said, look, I'm not coming to any more of your sessions, but I'm going to recruit 2 of my ex-students to work with me. And I don't want them to learn any sales training from you at all. I want you to teach them the products, okay? All the information about the products, the premiums, the rates, and the ins and outs, the pluses and the minuses of the products. They said, but you've got to do that. I said, no, they're going to do that. It was a bit of a challenge for them to accept it, but they accepted it in the end. So I started off my sales career as a life insurance agent, whereby I would go and talk to people. It was easy for me to talk to people because I had a whole range of connections and I'd simply say to people, I'd like to share some ideas with you. I've just taken up a new occupation. I've no idea whether I can help you. Now, I got those appointments because of the relationships I'd built and the trust I'd built over a period of time, okay? But I took the 2 kids with me. And so then I'd say to them, and just say it was you, Shane. I said, Shane, I'm a life insurance agent. I said, what? I said, I'm a life insurance agent. Oh, Peter, what'd you do that for? I said, no. More importantly, I don't know whether I can help you. I have no idea. And don't ask me anything about the products. I don't know about that either. That's why these 2 kids are here, right? What I want to do is listen to you, Shane. What I want to do is hear what your story is, and I will come back if I think I've got a solution for you. If I haven't got a solution, I'll still come back and I'll find a solution for you because you may need a lawyer, you may need an accountant, you may need something else, okay? and I've got connections there. So is that a fair thing? And that's how I started. And until the end of my life insurance career, I never, ever learnt one product, ever. I just talk with people, and people will open up with you and they will share with you when they can see and they can sense and they can feel that you truly care, that you are coming from your heart, right? That you're totally transparent. You're not trying to sell anything. You're just listening to them. And so I was quite different to every other life insurance agent around. And that, the result was, from a financial perspective, I earned double in my first year as a life insurance agent than what I would have as a school principal.
Tell me this. I can see how your approach was different. How was your approach welcomed or otherwise by your peers or the people that you were working with or alongside?
Initially, I had a huge problem with this because I was breaking the mold. And they said, it'll all come undone. Well, it didn't come undone. It kept going and going and going, right? But then I started to experience what I had in the education department, because all of a sudden they said to me, look, we'd like you to take on a management role so you can teach other people to do what you're doing. I said, "Woo! I didn't join for that reason. I'm joining to help people. People don't buy companies. People don't buy management. They buy people. I'm happy to help others. By all means, I'm committed to that. It's a passion of mine. But let me stay where I am. Oh, no, because we want you to go to Sydney and we want you to be the Australian sales manager for the entire company and teach them all." I said, no, I will go to Sydney and I'll teach them all, but I'm staying as an agent. And they had huge difficulty with that because they said, well, would you get a company car and you'll get that? I said, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the impact I can make with an individual customer and also with each individual agent. So they accepted that. So I spent maybe 3 days each month training people from all over Australia in how to go about building a business based on love, care, generosity and transparency. That's what it was all about, okay? And I'm still doing that today.
Yes.
My challenge was the management staff, the sales managers and the regional managers and the state managers and all those bureaucratic pains in the butt, right? Because these people came up from the old-fashioned thing and they could not correlate or resonate with this at all. And they were waiting to try and undermine me at every possible case. And in the end, they were losing agents because they weren't prepared to accept that the result that, the agents were doing really well, okay? And I would take some credit for that, okay? But I didn't ask for any overriders and commissions and things. I was giving to them. But in the end, I think we had in total about 2,700 agents, right? In the end, they had this agents meeting and they put together this scenario to say that they want to approach the company and for me to be able to manage them directly. Well, Shane, that's impossible. One person can't do that anyway. It's impossible, all right? So I said, thank you for the wonderful compliment, but no. So that was the beginnings of my career in the life insurance business. Does that answer your question?
It does, absolutely. And there's a couple of things I'd like to follow on questions. Do you believe the success you had in sales was down to an approach that was innate or intuitive? Or what were there things that you learned or had experiences from your time in education that really assisted you in making the best of your opportunity in sales?
Great question. There are four things. In fact, two. Four E's and four C's. Sounds like a school teacher, right?
Okay.
The four E's in terms of success in education was to empathize with the students, to get to understand them, okay, not just try and teach them from a blackboard, right? Empathize with them. The second one is to engage with them, to get them to understand and to share with them your feelings and thoughts about whatever the particular topic may be and get them to feed back to you rather than just sit and be a vessel that take stuff. I never, ever used a textbook in the classroom. I used to use the Financial Times and the various, and if they wanted a definition, I'd say, you've got a textbook, go and check it out, all right? So the first one was empathize. The second one was engage. The third one, of course, naturally, was to educate them. So I actually educated them. But that meant actually challenging them and their belief structures, actually saying, this is what the textbook is telling you. Do you truly believe that? Because at the end of the day, I knew when it came to the examination for these kids at the end of high school, they needed to differentiate themselves and come up with particular information that was something different to the textbook, right? So I educated them to challenge the status quo. And then finally, I empowered them. I empowered them to go ahead, believe in themselves, and to actually write what they truly believed in when it came to an essay within economics. So empathize, engage, educate, and empower. And I use those same four things today in sales, which I can come back to. The other four things were four C's. That was to communicate. And the main thing about communication is to get their attention. And really, you've got less than 10 seconds to get people's attention. They could be sitting in your classroom in front of you, okay, with a pen in their hand, but their eyes are vacant. If you haven't got them straight away, you've got to grab their attention. And you can see the relevance to that within the sales arena, right? The second thing is you've got to connect with them. And the way I used to connect with them is use stories. Not stories about me, but stories that they could relate with, stories that they could resonate with. I didn't want to come across as the expert. I wanted to be come across as someone who was believable to them. They think, wow, and they could see themselves in the story. Okay? And you can see also the relevance of that to sales. The third C was to converse with them, to talk with them, have a conversation with them, to use questions to go deep with them, to check their understanding. And once again, you can see how obvious that would be within sales to do that right, okay? Because many salespeople still ask a question because they're taught to ask a question, and whatever the first answer is, they just jump on it and say, yeah, we've got a solution for you, boom. And that first question and that first answer may be absolutely way off mark in terms of what's really driving the need of the prospect. But they're so busy to sell their stuff and to trot out how good they are and how long they've been in business and how much whatever it is, they don't go deep with the prospect. And the final C is create. I used to work together with the students and I worked together with the clients. I used to work together with my sales clients from life insurance to create together the best possible buying decision for them. Notice I didn't say sales. I mean, one of the C's could have been convinced that's not what I want to do. I want to work together with them. And I would help them achieve clarity. What really is important to Shane? What's really the thing you need to do? And why is it important to you? And how long have you tried to do this? And what have you tried up until now to solve the problem, which I think you're aware of because we did work together before a couple of times. The key issue is this. You help them with the best possible buying decision, okay? And it may not necessarily be with your offer. But you can't win them all. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. You've done the right thing. You have positioned yourself as a valuable resource, as a trusted resource. And I can tell you the people that you deal with, even if they don't become clients of yours, will become advocates. And advocates are the people who will refer you to other people. And that's exactly what's happening to me right now. So can you see how education, I just took what I learned in education and used in education and applied it to the sales arena, which was diametrically opposed to the traditional sales approach.
And do certain people have natural advantages or do you think it's something that can be learned and honed?
No, you can learn it. I mean, one of my most successful clients is one of the shyest people in the world. And the biggest problem with sales is the word sales. That's the problem. Okay, because people have this connotation feedback mindset about sales because they've been stung by experts, they've been ripped off by who knows, etc. And in this day and age of coronavirus, when there's a lot of people staying at home, there's fear, there's uncertainty, there's a huge amount of skepticism. So the last thing they want is a sales pitch. I mean, that's just an insult to do that. What you need to do is to actually position yourself as someone who shows care, love and understanding and prepared to listen to them. And that's why I was sharing the four E's and the four C's with you. And you can learn that. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. But you can do it. And the reason why I say it's not easy is because it's going to challenge you and your self-belief. You have to believe in you. You truly have to believe in what you're doing, and you truly have to believe that you can make an impact. If you do not have those three things, you can't do it.
For somebody that might be struggling with a certain lack of self-belief, and I think it's fair to say that when you look out there at the wider world and when you get talking to people up close, lack of belief in themselves is a really common thing to witness. And I see it even with people who might be at the top of their profession, the top of their game, but they have that, whether it's an imposter syndrome or a fragile belief in themselves. And when something goes against them, they might crumble in a way. How do you build self-belief? Is that something you've kind of worked on or thought about?
Yes, but I don't want to position myself as some guru in that area. Okay, I share with people what worked for me. And in particular, I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but you've got to come from your heart, not from your pocket. That's the number one point. Okay, you must come from your heart because people will sense that. People will feel that. Okay, because and that will differentiate you from other salespeople because they don't do that. Okay, and there's some steps that people need to take in order to look at the self-belief thing. The first thing is you need to take back control of yourself and your business and ditch all the fear-based strategies and thoughts that you've got. You just got to ditch them. Is that easy? No, but you've got to ditch them. And a lot of the clients I'm working with now, that's the biggest challenge I've got, to get them to go through that process of just putting aside the things that they've tried and failed with because it's not going to work, okay? And we talk about alternative ways of doing that. The second thing is this, and this is another really tough thing for people, but you've got to make peace with the reality of your situation because, after all, you created it. I mean, if you're broke, stop shaming yourself for it. Just accept it, make peace with it, and let's move on, okay? Thirdly, you've got to shift your focus from getting clients to serving clients. Very, very important distinction, right? Next, you need to let go of any attachment, especially emotional attachments, to making money fast. If you are trying to make money fast, I'm not going to help you, and I can't help you, and I don't think anyone else can either. Because what you're doing is you're coming from a place of desperation, and that will impact on what you say, how you say it, and the people's feelings about you, okay? And finally, you need to take simple little steps in this process towards success. And your ability to attract the right people will dramatically increase if you start, because you will get some success. The success doesn't have to be a sale, so to speak. The success could be someone who opens up and shares with you. A success could be someone who refers you to somebody else. Success could be something like, I'm having a discussion with Shane Breslin, and Shane says, this has been an eye-opener for me. I've never had this sense of clarity before. You shocked me. You surprised me. All those things are ways to build people's confidence in themselves, and I teach them how to do that. There are five questions that I say to people. These are five questions you need to ask yourself before you have any sales conversation with anybody. And I'm using the word sales conversation on purpose because I don't care if you've got to hang up about sales or not. If you don't make any sales, you haven't got a business. Let's be reasonable. Let's put the cards on the table. You need to be able to sell something whether you like it or not. Okay? These are five questions that will help position you in your mindset to sell whatever in the heck it is you've got, whatever offer, product or service, whatever it is. The first question is this, and you need to ask yourself this, remember, before you talk to your potential client. First, what do I want to feel during this conversation? Right? What do I want to feel? Do you want to feel happy? Do you want to feel connected? Do you want to feel energized? Do you want to feel love? Do you want to feel like being of service? I mean, they're your feelings. So choose whatever you want to feel rather than worry about trying to do it right, rather than worry about what questions they might ask you. Think about that. What do you want to feel? The second thing is, what's the most important skill or value for me to bring forth during this conversation? Now, this is where you focus on your skills and your values, not on your offer, not on your product or your service, but on your skills and your value. What do you stand for? What do you believe in? Okay, this is important for you. So instead of focusing your energy on selling, you focus on your skills and the values that will automatically engage your potential client without you having to try too hard. Okay. The next one, and by the way, important, energy is critical. It is truly critical because energy is a thing that people are attracted to. Next one. This is tough. I ask people to think this through. What will I have to release, get rid of, in order to have a heartfelt connection with a prospect? I mean, for example, maybe it's the attachment. Maybe you need a yes from the client because you need the money to put the food on the table. You're desperate, okay? And or maybe you're worrying about saying the right thing. Or maybe there's an anxiety about the reactions to your price. Whatever these things are, you need to actually release them. They're not going to go away. They're still going to be there, but you've got to release them and say, this is not what I want to focus on. I want to focus on giving help. I want to focus on listening. I want to focus on showing people how they can get clarity with what they want to do. And whatever happens as a result of that, I'll take. Fourthly, you've got to then believe, why do your products or your services or your, why do they really rock? I mean, what's the value of them? I mean, if you're not crystal clear about the awesome benefits of your offer, how could your potential client become excited about it? Think about that. If you don't believe in it, neither will they. But I'm not asking you to leave with the offer or the product. I'm just simply saying in your mindset, you need to know and truly believe that you can impact on people. You can make a difference, provided you earn the right to do that. And you only earn the right to do that by empathizing, engaging, educating, and empowering them, all right? So finally, it comes to what's the best outcome I can imagine from this sales conversation? Now, don't answer that from a place of fear. Don't be afraid to think big. Maybe they'll pay you 2 years in advance, whatever it may be. The most important thing is don't be realistic based on previous expectations, but rather outrageous, because it'll stop you from overthinking. So those five questions I ask people to ask themselves to position themselves in their mindset so they can then approach the potential client, the prospect, whatever you want to call it, in a way that they know they can definitely add value, that they know they're going to help people, that they know they're coming from their heart. And those things combined will create an incredible reaction within your potential client. Does that make sense?
It sure does. And there's lots of value there, even in those simple questions to ask. Can I ask for a clarification or an elaboration on one of them? The last one you asked, which is what is the best outcome I can imagine from this conversation? It strikes me that that might be one of the most difficult things for people to do, in terms of we are conditioned in so many ways because of our experiences to have expectations that are similar to our experiences in the past. How might we look on a conversation with a blank canvas?
That is a huge question, Shane, a huge question. And I honestly can't give you a technical answer or a professional answer to that. All I'm saying is you need to push yourself out of your comfort zone. Don't be realistic because of your previous experience. If you've been failing, et cetera, fine. But if you're going to keep doing that, then you're going to keep failing anyway, right? So you've got to be fair to yourself. Simply saying, why not give this a shot? I mean, if I just keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to keep failing up like I'm failing. The best possible outcome you can consider could be something like the person says, thank you. I really appreciate your time. Or may I refer you to Shane Breslin, a friend of mine who needs your help, or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be only money. Does that make sense?
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
And if you approach it that way, because it's feelings-based, okay? And be quite frank, I'm not trying to advocate some soft-hearted business approach. That's not what I do, okay? I run a business, and I have a business that's important to me because my mission, as I mentioned earlier, is the kids in this village. But within that mission, I do it from a heart-centered approach, and I make sure that people follow that, because if they don't follow that, I can't help them.
Great. It's really clear, and it's really interesting to hear you describe it, because it's like all the best things. It's simple but not easy, right? It's clear and straightforward, but it can be difficult to do. But I think having the awareness about what needs to be done is the first step. I want to hear more about where you are now in the world and how you work, because this is one of the reasons that I wanted to bring you on here. In this place and this time, this point in time that we find ourselves in, where not only hundreds of thousands, millions, maybe tens of millions of people around the world are finding that the life that they had and the job that they had or the profession or the career and the lifestyle is just swiped out from under their feet like a carpet, like a rug, because of the coronavirus, but not just because of the coronavirus, because of the economic fallout that comes when everything stops. And at the same time, in every country around the world, so many people are moving to or online or thinking about online and trying to figure out, how can I work in this arena that previously I might have used for to keep in touch with friends and family on Facebook or WhatsApp or wherever it is, and they're suddenly forced to face up to the prospect that maybe this is a way that they can start a business, run a business, make a living. And I want to hear about your perspective on that, because I know that that's something that you do very effectively. Can you tell us a little bit about the practicalities of your business, how you work, and how that's developed over the last number of years?
Okay. But let me just preface this by saying there's a group called Ebbinghaus, and they've come up with some interesting statistics which I want to share with your audience. And that is, within 24 hours, you're going to forget 75% of what I've been telling you. Okay? And within 30 days, you'll forget 90% of what I've just told you. And the 10% that you do recall, 50% of that is incorrect anyway. So if you're listening to this podcast and you find it of some value, I'm strongly suggesting you write something down, because that's the only way you're going to remember it. Okay? I just want to put that proviso in there.
Yeah.
How do I work? Okay. I have very simple procedure. For example, you mentioned Facebook. I've got 557 Facebook lives at the moment. Okay. And in those Facebook lives, I try to put myself in the shoes of people who are struggling in a business. Okay. And give them what I think are things that they need to do. Tell them what they need to do. But it's a business I'm running too. So I tell them what they need to do, but I don't tell them how to do it. I mean, I'm being totally transparent and with you, okay? Because otherwise, what's the point? I'm just going to be a do-gooder who does all these things. Oh, God, you're a good guy, Peter, blah, 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 blah. Now, people appreciate what I'm giving them. But that also is what attracts people to me. They reach out to me. I mean, I have a call to action, for those not sure what that is, at the end of a video or whatever it may be, or a podcast, not this one, I would simply say something like, if any of this concerns you or worries you, reach out and message me, okay? And what I then do is say, with your permission, because it's always permission-based marketing, with your permission, may I send you a calendar link, okay, where we can spend 15 minutes together looking at the number one issue that's challenging you. And I'm sure we can come up with something that helps you. Would that be of help to you? 90% of the people say yes. And that's how I run my business. because then I don't care what their challenges is when it comes to sales. I've been doing it for so long, it doesn't really matter, right? But really, most of them are missing the point because they're talking to the wrong people anyway, right? And they're just shooting themselves in the foot and getting further and further and further depressed and losing more and more confidence. They need to think outside the square, and I try to help them do that. So I do it from a Facebook Live perspective. I don't do any paid advertising at all. Zero. Okay? None at all. I also am pretty active on LinkedIn, okay, and do the same sort of service on LinkedIn. And it's a natural thing for me. And by the way, it doesn't take a hell of a lot of time either. For example, I'm going into the weeds a bit, Shane, but this is what you wanted to know, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I create a Facebook Live video, for example, I will then simply repurpose that video. I'll upload it to YouTube, okay? And that opens up another area of potential clients. And I'll take that video and I'll embed it on my blog. And that opens up another area of potential clients. And then I take that video and put it on LinkedIn. So the one video is used four times, okay? Mm-hmm. And what I then do is I wait a period of time and then I create a post for social media. And remember I said to you in the four C's, the first one was in terms of communicate. In other words, get people's attention, right? So what I do is I create a post on Facebook and LinkedIn with an image. And for those who want to know, I use a place called Pexels, PEXEL.com, okay? Mm-hmm. And I use a thing called PicMonkey, which is a paid service but pretty inexpensive. And I find an image and I put words on it that is going to stop Shane Breslin in his tracks. In other words, it's going to stop you from scrolling through your media, through your news feed, whatever it may be.
Mm.
And that then leads into a three or four paragraph thing that says, if you're interested, let me know and I'll share a video with you. Now, that's the video that I was speaking about previously. So I repurpose again. But, I mean, there's obviously, I might wait 6 months before I do that.
And the way you attract, the way you communicate with, and I suppose prospect with potential customers is primarily or maybe even exclusively through video. Is that a personal choice or do you feel that there's something about video that everybody should embrace?
I think it's powerful. It's truly powerful because people can, and the written word's powerful as well. Don't misunderstand me. But video, and I really do not ever try to come across as someone who's got great expertise, who is a guru. I just want to come across as someone who is relatable. That's my total focus, right? If you can relate with me, if you can resonate with me, then you're going to reach out to me. If I come across as someone with all the answers and do this and start bragging about make millions of dollars or whatever it is, because I mean, as you well know, Shane, people who are at home right now considering an online venture, please be careful. There are a lot of charlatans out there who are selling business opportunities. You've got to use common sense, but be careful because they also employ very expensive copywriters to make their stuff look unbelievably good. Mm. And I can tell you right now, I've never, ever seen any that give you all the answers, despite what they say. So you've got to be prudent, do your own analysis of things, and maybe talk with people like you, Shane, because you've been there and done that, okay? You understand this. I don't believe in selling sales opportunities at all simply because it conflicts with what I'm trying to do in coaching people. You can't do both, right? That's stupid.
What is the first thing that somebody could do if they're sitting at home, maybe they've lost their job, maybe they're thinking that they need to try something new, something different to get started and to start their career, to restart their career, maybe in an online arena. What's the first thing that they could do to get that ball moving?
First of all, they need to think, what are they interested in? Put money aside, okay? What is their interest? What's their passion in life? Because if you're going to do something that you're not interested in, just you're just doing it for the money, it's not going to last very long anyway, right? Now, by the way, I'm not saying that you can always make money out of the things you love. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is if you don't have an interest in it, then you're not going to believe in it. And if you can't believe in it, it's not going to work. So the first thing is to list off what are the things that are important to you in life. Okay. Secondly, why are they important to you? And be honest with yourself here. I'm deliberately not trying to say, do you think of a business opportunity? I'm talking about you. I'm talking about the individual. What turns you on? What is the challenge right now? Apart from the coronavirus, and maybe you've got people in your family who are suffering right now, and my heart goes out to you. And by the way, I'm a prime candidate, right? I'm 75 years of age soon with severe heart disease. I'm a prime candidate for this stuff. And in December and January, I was in hospital with severe pneumonia. So I have to be careful too. I understand more than people realize the dangers and the challenges and the fears that are coming with what we're facing now. But don't give up. That's my point. Don't give up. I mean, I don't want to give up, and I'm not prepared to give up because I've got too much to do, right? Too much to give. So think about that. Think about what you're interested in, what your passion is. Think about why it's important to you. And think about what would you do if you could run a business that way? What would you do with the money? What would you do with it? Okay? And you need to be absolutely honest here with this and list what you would refer to as your why. Why are you doing this? Because if you don't have the why, and if you just say, I need the money to pay the bill or to put the groceries on the table, that's not good enough. You got to go a lot deeper than that, okay? A lot deeper than that. And once you do that, I can tell you then the potential, the opportunities you need to seek will appear for you because you're going to approach it from a mindset which is exactly right. You're not trying to sit, you're not coming from a desperation mindset looking at some business opportunity. You're coming from a mindset when you truly understood yourself and you truly believe what you can do and you truly believe that if you're given just even a modicum of opportunity, you can make a winner out of this. And by the way, one last thing. Sorry, Shane. If you're thinking about, this is just some very big overviews. If you think about serving a business, I remember I said serving, not selling, then think about this. Business owners are thinking of three things: how to increase their revenue, how to reduce their costs, and how to expand their market share. So once you've gone through your self-analysis of you and what you believe in and all this sort of stuff, think about that. And that's the business to business side. If you're looking at it from business to customer, which they refer to as B2C, then these are the things that your prospects will be thinking. One, why in the hell should I do business with you? Right? I don't know who you are. Why should I do business with you? Secondly, how can you help me psychologically, including all the emotions and fears and desires and things that I've got? Thirdly, will you be able to help me physically? Now, that's applicable if you've got a health and wellness type approach to things, whatever it may be, or travel, etc. And finally, how can you help me financially? So they are some thoughts that I'd ask people to think about, and they were off the top of my head because I didn't know you were going to ask the question anyway. So
you brought up the financial thing there, and it is important. If we don't sell, we don't have any finances and we can't put food on the table and we can't grow our business or serve our business. On the financial side, are there any quick strategies or helpful strategies for people to determine their pricing and also to get paid?
Let me share this with you. Remember earlier I said the approach you should have from a mindset is empathize, engage, educate, and empower, right? The idea of that, this is a long-winded way to answer a question, but it's important you get hold of this. The idea of that is to build a trusting relationship with your potential client, your prospect, okay? Because if you've done that, they would have opened up to you. They would have shared with you what truly is important to them and why it's important to them. And then you don't need to do any simple, fancy closing questions because you've already got the rapport, you've got their trust, you know exactly what's driving them, okay? And you have given them nothing but value. You haven't even given them a solution yet, right? You've just given them value. So what you would say then, once you've done that, and the way that you empower your people to actually do business with you is you simply say a simple sentence, something like this. Shane, what would you like to do next? I'm not giving you a short-term answer to getting quick money because I don't know. I really don't know how to do that. But I know how to build a business. And you can do a bit, and you can build a business doing the things I've shared with you today. But not only that, if you do these things, it will change your mindset about sales. Because guess what? You'll start to enjoy what you're doing because you're adding value and you're giving impact to people and you're changing people's lives. And hell, and that's a pretty good deal, I reckon.
It sure is. And the second part of that was around getting paid piece. I think it's something that people struggle with. Even they might have be able to make that rapport, make that connection, to sign the contract. But when it comes to getting actually physically getting paid, something it's something that a lot of people struggle with. Is what would you say to people in that position?
They struggle with that because they don't believe in what they're doing. Okay? The last thing you should do is discount what you're doing. If you truly believe in the value and the impact and the transformation you can make to people, don't cheapen what you're doing. I mean, if something is $1,000, you say, well, look, I need the customer, you can have it for $50. A stupid example, right? Mm. I mean, the customer's going to simply say, oh, $50, right? That's not very valuable anyway. No, thanks anyway, right? So what I'm saying is this. The price hang-up is in your head, not in the prospect's head. If prospects say to you, let me think about it, or it's too expensive or whatever it is, I mean, that this goes into an hour and a half coaching session, so I'll make it really quick in one sentence. What you simply say to the client is, let me ask you again, and you state, what is their number one priority? Tell me, Mr. Potential Client, why is, and you quote them back word for word, what their number one priority is, because you built that up during the conversation. Why is that important to you? Share with me again. I need to understand that, okay? So get them to share. So, okay, from a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not the slightest bit interested, 10 being I need to solve the problem with you today, where do you rank yourself? Where are you? And if they say 4, 5, or 6, then you have failed to provide the value that they need to hear to justify the price that you're offering. If you get an 8, 9, or 10, they are really interested. And all you need to do if they're an 8 or a 9, simply saying, what else do I need to do to get you to a 10? That's the best way I could answer the question in the short term we've got, Shane.
Peter, it's been great. Thank you so much. Final question I'd ask you is, you've been very open about your age. You're 75 this year. You've had your health challenges. What is left to do? Why do you keep doing what you do? Or what is a measure of success that you still want to achieve?
The measure of success for me is a look on the parents' faces in this village when they send their child off to school with a brand spanking new school bag, school clothes, and books that they couldn't previously afford. That look on their face is priceless. That keeps me going. That's one of my major drivers, okay? I don't need to be online. I mean, I've done pretty well in my life. But I am blessed to be able to impact on people with their sales potential and then use the results of those coaching fees to help children who otherwise would go into a vicious cycle of poverty. And I mean, that's the reason I keep going. I can't think of a better thing than that. And I mean, to be quite frank with you, I'm hope I'm still doing this when I'm 85. Okay? Heaven forbid. But does that make sense?
It does. It does. Peter, it's been wonderful talking to you. I think when this coronavirus pandemic and the lockdown that all of us are experiencing calms down, I think that Thailand will be on the radar for a lot of people. And you've given a great insight into your perspective on a part of Thailand that maybe a lot of people don't get to or aren't familiar with. And I thank you. I just want to acknowledge you and thank you for doing what you do. Thank you for your openness and transparency and for your warmth and generosity. It's been really great to have you on the show and I'm looking forward to getting this out there.
My pleasure, Shane. I hope it helps even one person. If it just helps one person in this day and age of coronavirus uncertainty and fear, then it's been worth it. That's what I think.
It sure has. Where can people find out more about you? Where can people get in touch with you?
GOOGLE. Just Google Peter Beckenham, all right? Just Google. There's 1,000+ pages there, and you'll discover one of the ugliest websites on the internet, but it works.
Peter, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers, Shane. My pleasure as well. Bye-bye.
That's all for this week's episode of the show. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. If I could invite you to do two things, or do one of two things, if you got something out of this show. Number one, if you could, it'd be really great if you could leave a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this podcast. If there's a review system, it'd be fantastic if you go in there and leave a review. That helps to get this show, the Life Well Lived podcast, to more listeners. And I'd be really grateful if you could do that. And also on this episode, on what you've just heard with Peter Beckenham, if there were elements of this show that really proved helpful to you or something that you would like to share with others, it'd be really great if you could just take a screenshot on your phone or your computer and share that out on whichever is your favorite social media platform, whether that's LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or wherever you spend time. It'd be fantastic if you could get a screenshot out there and share it with your friends on there. You'll find all the other episodes of the Life Where I Live podcast in the archive on my website. So if you navigate to shanebreslin.com, you'll find a link for podcast, and there are 28 other episodes there ready and waiting for you. And hopefully you get something valuable from some of those also. Thank you again so much for listening to this show. It's really great to be able to bring these interviews and conversations to you each week. And I look forward to welcoming you back for further episodes down the line.